it with you cat people. Would you leave me alone? I'm a dog person, okay?
It's really not that.
I mean, isn't it really that big of a deal whether I'm a cat person or I'm a dog person in the big scheme of things?
We're going to get into that. It's Friday, thank goodness. I'm so glad it's Friday. And it's the Nancy Skinner Show on Friday, so two good things. At least for me. I don't know how it's working out for you. 866-991-9927, the number to the program. Good, happy Friday afternoon. Long week. Happy to have made it through, but I'm serious. Let me see. I've got my new BlackBerry, CrackBerry working, and I'm getting emails both ways about the cat thing. Darn it. I'll have to read that for you. Oh, I lost it. I had it. See, we'll figure that out. But people are upset with me because I said something about cats. What didn't I like? I said there's two things I don't like, and I forgot. Cats and something else. Chaos. Global economic meltdown. No, I'm not allergic. Yeah, actually, I'm allergic to them. If I touch them and then I touch my eyes, if I'm in a room, it's not, it's, you know what it is? I had a cat. I actually rescued a cat growing up, Junior, from the alley. Tried to hide it in my parents' bathroom. And I always says, you clever kid, you. And they kept it for like 13 years and loved this cat. So we had this cat. We also had a dog, Rufus, growing up. And then I had a Dalmatian for 16 years myself. I love all animals. Africa was the best place I've ever been. I love animals. But in the scheme of things, I don't know. And then I've been talking to people, and a lot of people feel the same way. The cats can be creepy. I know that some of them are dog-like. Those cats, okay, that are dog-like, are okay. But that's how people try to sell it to me. But there's something about sort of the, I don't know, the dander, the maybe they are, they're not warm and caring, although some can be. I feel like the president with the Special Olympics situation here. You know, you just don't always have to be politically correct. If you agree with my politics, if you agree that I know what I'm talking about when it comes to the global economic crisis, then just forget about the cats, okay? And I got a supportive email that way as well. So when I figure this thing out on the break, when I actually get into the show and figure out how to do this, because you can go to nancyskinnerlive.com. Eric said that the other day. You have to say it that way, right, Eric? Say hi to Eric. Eric, say hi to our listeners. This is the guy on the other end who I get to pick on occasionally when you aren't watching.
Hey, watch that.
So you do have to say. You can't just say nancyskinnerlive.com. You have to say nancyskinnerlive.com. I don't know why, but if you don't
You've
do
been
it.
Practicing that, haven't you?
If you don't do it that way, it won't work. It's a technology thing. All right. we've got lots going on today. It's Friday. The boy toy is not here this Friday. I want to just alert you to that. He is my James Boyce, who was my normal Friday boy toy, hangs out with me this hour usually. He's in the Bahamas. So some of us apparently have more dedication to work and pulling together and pulling through this crisis
chopped liver
than others. Well, you haven't. He's like the official boy toy of the program. I mean, you just don't walk in and work the board and think you're going to be the boy toy on Friday. It's a whole designation thing. He worked it. So he's the Friday. But if you want to try to play the role of boy toy today,
yeah,
Aaron?
Not really. I just had to give you a little bit of business.
A little bit. Well, you got to speak up. You're a radio guy. Come on.
Okay.
Get those pipes going. You know how that goes. There's a thing called a microphone.
For that role.
Okay, he's working on boards. Anyways, and Miss Liz, the lovely Miss Liz, is on the other end of the line at 866-991-9927. Except for the creep that called all day yesterday. That line, we've censored out you. That one creep called constantly and harassed poor Miss Liz and Eric, right? You guys both got harassed yesterday. Do you care to, like, describe, you know, obviously this is a family program, so you can't go into all the context, but after the show I got the update, and it was the creep update.
He is definitely a conspiracy theorist.
How did you figure that out?
We'll just say testicular fortitude.
Oh, really? So then it got personal. Started with Liz. And how can anyone not like Miss Liz? Because she's the sweetest.
I don't think he had a question about her testicular fortitude, only mine.
Oh. And he didn't think you were a big guy. Eric probably weighs, I don't want to even guess. He's a big, what would you say, Eric? Big, all muscle, too.
Oh, thanks. You're so kind.
Like 250?
Somewhere around there.
Yeah. Oh, like solid muscle. Creep. So when you call, ask about that next time. No, he was talking about 9/11, conspiracy theories, all kinds of them, right? There were multiple and varied.
Oklahoma City. I think he had a couple.
Oklahoma City,
well,
really?
I can't really remember.
Okay.
I tried to block it out with some therapy earlier today.
And what, Jaeger therapy?
Okay, so you know my doctor. That's fine.
Anyways, we weren't on that subject. We were talking about AIG and bailouts, and so we hadn't gotten into the conspiracy part of the program. In any case, you can call 866-991-9927 if you're not that creep. But I did meet another. Well, I wouldn't go so far to say creep before I get into this show today, but it was pretty funny. With the NCAA, did you watch the games last night? Big games, right? You didn't watch any games?
No, I was actually busy working.
Oh, see, now I would challenge your testicular fortitude if you're a guy not watching.
Okay, I was watching the Playboy Channel, okay? Is that good enough for you?
Well, you know, I think given the fact that it's the March Madness, I think that it's more manly probably to be watching B-ball than Playboy. But
I stand corrected.
Okay, but because Michigan played Clemson last night. And beat them. It was a good game, close game. So I was, you know what? And I am, as much as I defend President Obama, I am peeved at him because he did not pick Michigan in his brackets. I knew that this was going to be an issue, and it is an issue, and it was an issue. I knew this instantly. I was working out yesterday at the gym, and of course at the gym they all have ESPN on. That's why you guys know so much about world affairs. And in any case, because I go to a world gym thing. And I saw President Obama doing the whole bracket. And he didn't do the first round. He stepped in. His staff did the first round, and he did all the rest of the rounds in each of the regions. And Michigan, finally we made it. It's been a long time. Michigan State goes every year or the last many, many years. And he passed my team over. And then my team won. So maybe the president isn't right about everything. In any case, I have a funny story to tell before I get into serious business about that. Because yesterday I was so on edge. This AIG thing has had so many people on edge. The anger is brewing. It's boiling into the streets. Yes, even me, your host, was a little out of my zen-like center last night while watching the game out with my friend Marcy. And overheard a comment about the economy, about AIG. And I laid into some poor sucker. I'm going to tell you that story. Before we jump into the latest developments, which I've processed, and then we'll regurgitate for you and have some conspiracy theories of my own, actually. 866-991-9927, that's the number to the program, except for the creep, on the Nathan Skinner Show. Oh, yeah, dude, this is, way past my time. I don't know who this is. It is the Nancy Skinner Show. I'm Nancy Skinner, 991-9927. In fact, programming notes, you can see me, actually. I did the member yesterday. I told you I would be taping that show, Cashing In, on the Fox News Channel. Well, I just taped it, and here I am straight off that. You can see it tomorrow at 11:30 a.m., and then they play it a whole bunch of times on the Fox Business Network after that or later on in the day and night. But it's called Cashing In, 11:30. And it was just pretty much what I said it would be, as I predicted to you, the topics would be. And, you know, I know how these things go. So I'll let you take a look at that. We're going to dive into that. But before I do, let me get that program note to you. Let's see. I did get an email at nancyskinnerlive.com. And it's about, this is very nice. This made me feel better. Russ writes in, don't worry about the cat guy email. Seriously. I am a dog person as well. Oh, my gosh. See, these things, I mean, I love it. It's crazy, these new fancy phones, but I just started reading. I'll have to get Russ's email back. It was a great email. What happened to it? Maybe I am an ignoramus. Perhaps. It's true. All right, so maybe that means I should just shut up and get into the show. What do you think about that? All right. Well, first let me finish with the story I was telling you, because it does lead us into issues of substance. Important issues of substance. So I go out, Michigan plays in the NCAA last night, and they're playing Clemson. My best friend Marcy and I go out, who, hard to hang out with my friend Marcy because she looks like Heather Locklear. So, you know, the guys are... But we went and had a cup of soup, and was just watching the end of the game, actually. And, you know, I'm trying to work the BlackBerry, actually. I'm learning it and doing all these things with it, and I'm not focused. I'm not looking, but there's a conversation happening across the bar. We're all standing there. It was not a crowded Tom's Oyster Bar in Royal Oak. Not a crowded place. And I hear this guy talking to his two friends, and he's talking about the AIG thing. So, you know, my ears want to hear what people are, what regular people are saying, who aren't involved in this on a like 3 hour day basis. And he starts saying, "Isn't that outrageous?" And he's like, he's all mad. I can tell the guy's all steamed, and I'm trying to figure out what he was steamed about specifically. Like, yeah, that was outrageous that they took those bonuses. That's what I'm thinking. He's saying, he's like, this, you know what this means? I'm going to hide my money under the mattress. That's what you need to do. You need to hide your money because this means, and he was, what he's talking about was the tax that Congress passed, the House bill passed to tax 90% of the retention bonuses for companies that receive over $5 billion in taxpayer dollars if they make over $250,000. Of course, he didn't have quite that clear of a grasp on the details. See, this is where all this stuff is, where public opinion matters so much. And he said, they can go in, the government, and just take your money. And so don't, what you got to do is you got to hide it under your mattress. And he was just really mad. Something like that. And my friend Marcy's talking to some gorgeous guy who's talking to her, and I speak up, shout across the way, and I said, "Wait, let me get this straight." He's a bald guy like you, Eric, too. And I said, "Let me get this straight. You're going to go hide your money under a mattress because these guys who basically tanked the economy at AIG and came hat in hand looking for a taxpayer bailout, and we did deliver that money, and the rest of us are dying out here, and they're taking our money. Now, you think that they deserve to get retention bonuses for being part of the Ponzi scheme that sunk the economy. And as a result of the government trying to get some redress from this horrible situation, you're going to go out there and hide your money under the mattress, right?" Now, normally that's not my MO. You know, I'm normally, once I get off the air, I calm down quite a bit. You couldn't be me. You just couldn't walk around like I do for 3 hours a day at this energy level. I'm a nice person, a lot of friends, and I don't even talk politics. I mean, you know, occasionally, but I don't really talk politics with people who aren't into politics because, you know, you just can't go there. Or cats. You know, I mean, there's just a couple places you just can't go. So anyways, this guy, he shouts back at me. What's his response? Did he have some well-thought-out response to this, that this is confiscatory and whatnot, like Boehner or this? He gets mad and he says, "Nice blouse." That's what he said. Okay. So I'm laughing because when Marcy came over and said, "Come on, let's go watch the game," I pulled out a blouse, and it was... You know, it's a colorful blouse.
If you own a business, you know incorporating can be a smart...
Am I still... Okay. Are you commenting about my blouse, too? Is this like, what is the deal with this? Anytime this blouse, it comes out of the closet. Anyway, it wasn't like risque or anything. I like it, but apparently it's loud. Let's just say it was loud, and I had a black skirt on. Anyway, so this guy, that's what he shot back at me at my blouse. Turned out... I went over and I said, "Listen, I didn't mean anything personal or whatever." We made up. The guy's name is BJ. Stands for Brian Jennings. And turned out to be a nice guy. He's going to listen to the show and call in, I guess. But he said, "Okay, sorry about the blouse. That was my bad. Out of line." Anyways, that was my last night. When we get into this, I'll get into the bigger issues of how these people are trying to change the conversation to the direction they want. 866-991-9927. Your calls, except about the creep, the cat, or the boss.
K-Talk AM 1150. Progressive, the new mainstream.
Other than that, I'm glad you're one of the few talkers putting this AIG thing in perspective. I've been posting this over and over. The real reason people are so angry is because a whole lot of people voted for Republicans at some time over the past 30 years. Corporations will do whatever they can to make money as long as the law allows them. The Republicans told everybody back then that they were cutting regulations and thought that was a good idea and voted for it. The people who voted to cut regulations and cut taxes on the wealthy are ultimately the ones to blame. And I only hope they stay angry so next time they look into the platform of the person they're voting for and think about it as beyond the catchphrase. Also, Russ takes issue with me, and that's okay, too. I allow people to do that. I encourage that. even though he says, sorry, trying to be supportive. Thank you. When you stated Ben Bernanke was a Wall Street guy a week ago, he wasn't. Not like Paulson. The guy was a professor for the majority of his career with a specialization in the Great Depression. Yes, he was a member of the Board of Governors on the Fed for a few years before he became the Fed Reserve Chairman. But the real problem is that people are grouping all these guys together with Greenspan and Paulson, and that's not fair. That's convicting these guys as the result of association. Let's see. The guys who called the shots were Greenspan and Paulson, and that has to be repeated as often as possible because people just aren't getting it. No one takes the time to Wikipedia these guys. If people did, there'd be a whole lot less finger-pointing. The guy, along with Geithner, is talking a whole lot about abuse, taking a whole lot of abuse that should have been directed at their predecessors. Wikipedia Geithner while you're at it. The guy's qualified. The real problem is that his department is still bare bones. Communications is a mess because there aren't deputies to handle half this stuff. 90% of the arguments against Geithner are that he's associated with people who progressives love to hate, like Paulson and Rubin. That's just politics of association. It's the same stuff we railed against in the last election when Republicans tried to Shanghai Obama with these same types of tactics. Russ, you are an extremely smart guy there, and that's why I read that whole email, because it's getting me to my point. And you are correct. If I said that Bernanke was just a Wall Street guy, then I stand corrected, because I do know that he is a great student of the Depression. I knew that, so I must have been brain dead in that particular moment. But you are correct in that, in everything you said. Here's the thing that's so interesting, and I watch this play out. Watch this play out, okay? How they're trying to deal with this argument. So they're calling President Obama Mr. Personality President, right? And he's Mr. Everywhere President. We have some guests who are going to say, he should be focused. Everybody's saying he needs to be focused. In fact, I saw, who was it? Well, they're all criticizing him. Mitt Romney starting his reelection for 2012, right? Or 2000, yeah. I'm trying to find a cut. So let's see. Where is him talking about Romney and why, if Obama should have been on Leno? Why am I not? There you go. There.
Republicans are seeing a problem with the president doing the Tonight Show, the first sitting president ever to do a late evening fun show. Do you have a problem with it?
Well, this probably isn't the right time for that. I must admit, I line up with Warren Buffett on this. I'd prefer to see the president focusing all of his time and energy on the economy. I'd like to see him.
That's what he was talking about.
He's talking about it. He's out doing a rally in California, and he's posing for the cover of magazines and doing a number of things. He's putting together a health care plan, putting together a cap and trade program, a lot of things on the agenda. And frankly, if you're doing too many things, a couple of important things can slip by, and one of them that slipped by was the AIG legislation that allowed AIG executives to get these bonuses. It was put in a specific bill. Now, of course, the administration is saying they didn't know about it. But, you have to ask yourself, if everybody was staying home, doing their job, focusing entirely on the economy, is that something that somebody would have read? I mean, you had a 1,000-page bill. Somebody ought to read it before they signed it.
But nonetheless, when he was asked specifically about AIG, okay, and Russia's doing the same thing. The talking points have gone out, folks, because this is what he was asked, believe it or not, Larry King. So, had a follow-through question for Mitt Romney.
Are you as angered over this AIG thing as apparently 90% of the public?
Yeah, my view is that this is really the fault of two parties. One, the members of our government that weren't paying attention at best. That's the the most favorable way to characterize it. They weren't paying attention to the issue. They were doing a lot of other things. They should have been focusing entirely on the economy. And the other, of course, is the folks at AIG. And you ask yourself, why couldn't they have done what other enterprises do that get in trouble? Which is people come together, they talk about the sacrifice they're going to make to try and keep the enterprise going, but these guys seem not to be willing to do that, and I think it's unfortunate.
Okay, so he just described what it is the auto industry did, and earlier in the interview said he was against that because President Obama, or it was actually Bush, he said, was trying to help the automakers. The auto industry came together. Everybody decided they have to take a two-thirds haircut. They worked with the government, the bondholders, the shareholders, the auto workers. Everybody's working together to make this happen. It's an interest-bearing loan. And if you just really listen carefully to what he said, that I wish AIG would have come together and did what was necessary. And I'm angry, but the idea that, the idea that you can go after them, on the bailouts. Listen to his specific answer.
President Bush did it. President Obama's done it. And their answer has been, hey, you got to do it. You got to do what you got
to
do.
Well, the term bailout has been applied to a number of different things, and I think it's important to distinguish them. We don't want to have our economy collapse, so we're going to bail out the economy, if you will. We don't want to have our financial system collapse, because to make a market work, you've got to have a currency, you've got to have banks. You don't want to have a cascade of failures of banks so that your currency is not worth anything. But you don't, in a private world like our economy works in, you don't start bailing out companies one after the other or individuals that are in trouble. You don't say, I'm going to take care of this person and not that person, or this company and not that company. Bailouts of enterprises that are in trouble, that's not the right way to go. And I know President Bush started it with the auto industry. I thought it was a mistake.
All right, there you go. That's what I was looking for. It was a mistake to help the auto industry come together. All parties took a haircut. All of the parties decided what they were going to do. But no, it's okay to let AIG executives keep the bailout money. And that's what he said, basically. He said now to have the government have the power to go in, which is exactly what this guy, BJ, at the bar said. And exactly what Rush Limbaugh is saying on my way over. My honey bunny Rush was talking about this whole thing, trying to frame this because it's all upside down. It is not in their favor how this is working out with what these guys did to put this economy on the brink. So what are they going to go back to? Rugged individualism, right? And the power of the government, and the government's going to come in and have the power to tax you. Isn't that scary how they could do that? He even said to Larry King, Larry, the government could go in and they don't like what you say, and they could tax you as a result. The government shouldn't have that much power. Well, first of all, it didn't really concern anyone too much when they had warrantless wiretaps. Remember those against members of the media, which we now know to be the case? Keith Overman had a great interview with a former NSA agent who said, yeah, pretty much tapping everyone in the media who had a different opinion. So now they're worried about the power of the government when the constitutional, our civil liberties were violated routinely. But now when it comes to taxing the money to get some redress, to get the money back, so that we're not ripped off, because, remember, they came hand in hand looking for a bailout. This isn't just me going about my business with my little apple cart stand and the government coming in deciding they don't like that I'm a Democratic-oriented talk show host and exorbitantly taxing me. That is not what we're talking about. That's me going to them and saying, look, I need you, my apple cart business is going under, I need you to fund the whole darn thing, and then ripping them off, okay? So we talked about this analogy the other day, about the house is on fire, and these guys are trying to chase down the arsonist before they put the house on fire. Now they've taken it to the next step in this day's development. Now they are blaming the firemen who are trying to put out the fire, not the arsonists. They don't really care who the arsonists are. We're going to blame the firemen because they happen to be there with the hose. And if the first time they're trying to uncoil the hose and there's a little kink in the hose, they're going to blame the firemen, okay? Forget the arsonists, who in this case would be AIGFP, okay, Financial Products Division people. In this particular case, as we have come to learn, they knew that it was a Ponzi scheme. They knew that these credit default swaps, that they were over-leveraging themselves, that they were overselling these things, and it was all a house of cards, as President Obama. Everybody knew that. And so You know, essentially, if we're going to work with this analogy, it's the arsonists. They're the arsonists. And so now you've got all these guys. Rush Limbaugh, when we come back, I'll play his sound of him trying to put this, put some context on this. Mitt Romney, everybody trying to, Congress is completely, you know, upside down on this, split in the middle on what to do. Some voting for that tax to get 90% back. Some against it. Eric Kander is babbling on MSNBC. They don't know how to frame this. That's what it, this is about. Their framing is off. So the key is we frame it for them before they do, because usually we don't do that so well. And here's our perfect opportunity to frame this. 866-991-9927. This AIG debate is not about Geithner. It's about the arsonists. It's about the people who got us in this hole. And when you hear this, this whole individual ruggedness and all this stuff, I'm going to tell you exactly how you reframe it correctly right here on the Nancy Skinner Show. I'm the Nancy Skinner Show. It's Friday for everybody, in fact. It's the spring equinox, in fact. Really, spring is here. Spring is sprung. And so have we at the Nancy Skinner Show. 866-991-9927, helping to frame this whole situation day by day. Each development, now AIG is actually, New York Times is reporting, is suing the government, its majority shareholder, for another issue. So I'm listening to the arguments on the other side and framing them. They're all over President Obama because he was on Jay Leno last night, reaching out to some 5 million people. It wasn't all yuck last night. He was very clear about the seriousness of this, trying to talk to Jay Leno. Jay asked him serious questions. There was a conversation. Who cares whether it was on Jay Leno or Meet the Press or at the White House? What difference does that make, what show it is? It makes no difference. He's talking to the American people about what's going on, and that's what he needs to do, because these filters that he has to go through, like Rush Limbaugh and all these other guys, are distorting the greater message about what we need to do right now. 866-991-9927. John in Buffalo is up first. Hi, John.
Hi. First off, I don't think that Obama just wings it when he talks to somebody. I mean, maybe somebody decided what he was going to say, but who knows if that's a plant to get our minds off all the other things, like the money we're spending in the Iraq war, things like that. Like, stuff he does in bad taste, sure, that's in bad taste, but what about illegal things? He claims he didn't know about the basically the golden parachutes, the bonuses, and that was an amendment that had to be discussed between the House and the Senate, so then they went to committee. I mean, to say that you didn't know about it was like Bill Clinton saying he didn't, you know, have any relations with that woman.
That Obama didn't know about what went to, because Obama is in the executive branch, and the committee, the bills, that's on the legislative branch. A bill is a bill on Capitol Hill.
I agree, but what about him saying that the American public is going to have 48 hours to review these bills and things like that? I didn't get any review of it. I never was sent anything in the mail. I didn't know anything about that.
This was the stimulus bill that you're going back to, right, just to get the facts straight. So that he's put recovery.gov is the website that will document this. I do think, John, that they said, you know what, it was so important for us to get this bill going. The shot in the arm, it's like the house, let's stick with this. If the house is on fire, I'm going to give you open the books on the fire department. But you know what, the first thing you do is you get the hose out, and then, you know, you put the fire out, and then you open the books on the fire department.
Right, but there's a lot of things that, you know, like what he said on Jay Leno, find that that's in bad taste.
What?
There's about the about him bowling and
all the things you've got to worry about here. I knew this would come up.
No, I'm saying I don't want people to focus on that.
Jay Leno asked him about
I know.
About his bad bowling. Is he supposed to not answer the question? My God, people, you got to laugh once in a while.
I'm saying that people are focusing on it, and I don't think they should focus on it. I think they should focus on things like when Obama goes off in secret and meets with top officials and violates the law.
When did he go off in secret and meet with top officials, John?
Oh, gee, because I don't have the date. He didn't violate the Logan Act.
I don't even know what you're talking about. What Logan
Act? Well, you should. The Logan Act means that top officials can't discuss policy. It's always referred to as Bilderberg, but, you know, things like that, just because they met
the Bilderberg. Oh, the Bilderberger Conference. Oh, no, that wasn't, first of all, that wasn't Obama. There were a couple of members of his administration who have in the past attended this. Now I get where you're coming from, John. President Obama is not a Bilderberger trilateralist.
Well, he's an agent of finance capital. I mean, it's really.
He's not against capital. No. John, I gave you every shot here, but you're just rambling on there, my friend. Rambling on. And I do want to get to this. I want to inform folks about what the framing is happening, what's the talking point. There was actually a memo that was leaked, by the way, about blame on this, and they all pointed fingers at Chris Dodd, and they're trying to blame the Democrats. They want it both ways. That's the problem. You can't have this one both ways. You can't say that, listen, you guys, you can't let the bailout happen and before those bonuses going through and not for taxing them, but want to blame the Democrats and Obama for being mad and wanting to get that money back. You just can't have it both ways. Make up your mind. Don't be split as a party on this. Either you are for AIG, you are the party of AIG, they should get those bonuses. That's the great American way, that if you can rip the government off and we're too stupid to do anything about it, then God bless you. But you can't have it both ways. You can't blame the Democrats for doing it and say that those people should still get their money. Cameron is in Orange County, California. Hi, Cameron.
Nancy, how are you?
I'm great, thank you.
First of all, I do think that that it's scary to think that the government can change tax rules on one issue. Not sure it's legal. I think that that'll be proved out. There's a law that you can't unduly tax a certain segment of the population. But I hear Rush and I hear you and I hear the talk show hosts on both sides. They say you people and you guys. We got to make it about us, and there's enough blame to go around. Chris Dodd, Barack Obama, George Bush, Hank Paulson, Geithner, Barney Franks. I mean, it's not AIG is not a one-party company. They got multiple contributions from multiple politicians and multiple parties, and it's a sign of a good leader. I'm in business, not in politics. A sign of a good leader in business needs to be the same as it is in politics. Let's sit down around the table. Let's not point fingers. Let's all take some responsibility and figure out how we're going to fix it. And Rush and you and Sean and everybody else wants to make it about politics and about party, and it's not that. It's about our country.
But Cameron, I hear your point, but look at what I've been saying. Obama said, you want to blame someone, blame me and move on. And he said, that's what we have to do, is move on. What I am pointing out is this is because we've had this happen time and time again, and I'm not going to have a chance to play the Rush clip, but I heard it coming in, and I right before I came, so I recorded it. He's going to go back to this argument of this is about the individual, and he says that in trying to do exactly what you just said, Cameron, which is to have all the grown-ups sit around the table, and President Obama reached across the aisle, and he tried to get everyone on board, but in doing that, that he's trying to destroy individualism. That's what Rush Limbaugh said, that he's trying to destroy individualism and go back to that, take away your liberty and your own freedom. Now, do you believe that?
No, he's dead wrong. I mean, I'm not a Republican. I'm not a Democrat. I'm a conservative American, and I got a new XM radio, and I love it. It says America right and America left. Well, where's the station that's about America? There's too much vitriol on both sides, and I think that, and nothing against you, but I think...
No, I agree with you completely. I am not that person, Cameron. I get yelled at because I'm not too far, I'm not left enough for people on this station. They took me off the left station because I'm not left enough. So, Cameron, we're on the same page there. I think you got to keep listening, and you will get to know me a little bit better, okay? I'm out of time, but call back, because I really want to talk to you, because I think you're right on the money. All right, more to come. I'll give you that Rush cut when we come back on the Nancy Skinner Show.
Yeah.
in a really funky looking glass. Isn't that obvious? Pink and green. And... All right, it was a crazy blouse, all right? It was a crazy blouse, I admit it. This is the Nancy Skinner Show, 866-991-9927, number to the program. The blame game continues now. It's funny, I'm just watching, I've got CNN.com on my computer, on the internet, and Bernanke defends bailouts. Cafferty, should Geithner be fired over AIG? Spitzer, I failed in a very important way. Wait a minute, he had a bimbo bailout, not a bank bailout. That's a big difference there. Everyone's trying to figure out who's to blame here, as we've been talking about. Now, so here's the thing, though, because I've gotten good at this through the years, listening to the spin happen. Rush Limbaugh on my way in, my honey bunny, my little love boat, Tupperware, sweet Pete. He is hot. Sometimes it doesn't look that way on TV. The whole chemistry thing, that sort of animal magnetism doesn't come through, but it is. Oh, it's there. Anyways, I'm listening to him on the way in today. And here's the thing. This is what they're always going to go back to. All right? This is what Obama's doing. Just a little bit of
hatred toward the banks. So what are you mobsters going to do? When your president next tells you that or maybe he'll have Bernanke do it, but somebody representing the highest elements and reaches of our great government will announce we need another $750 billion, maybe a trillion, to take care of these toxic assets, because nothing's been done about that, or to get the credit flow going again. What are you going to do? You just flipped your wigs over $165 million in bonuses to AIG. You don't care a whit about $170 billion in bailout money to AIG. What are you going to do when you find out the very people you've been told to hate and blame for everything going wrong in your life are going to get another $1 trillion? This administration has demonized, successfully in too many Americans' minds, this administration has demonized the very people who are going to have to be made solvent if you are to be able to borrow money again and live your life. And I can't wait till this happens. I can't wait till they come back and say we need another $700 billion, $50 billion, trillion, whatever it is for the banks. It's another sign of the incompetence of these people. Everything, it's just throw it up against the wall on a daily basis and see what sticks, just to make sure we keep the heat off us.
Oh, yeah. 3 hours a day, my sugar plum is on the air. Wasn't that sort of weird? Did you hear that clip? That was sort of freaking me out. In the background of that clip of Rush Limbaugh was a clip, I recognize it well, because it's a clip of Barack Obama endorsing me for my congressional race. So they must have gotten, when I was putting those together, yeah. Because he's like, I've always loved Nancy. Where is Nancy? So Rush, here, I cut this up to deliver his little hate-filled rant to you. But mysteriously in the background, President Obama, and I don't know how that worked out, Eric. You have to fill me in. It's on YouTube if you want to go check it out. Go to YouTube.com. You can see President Obama saying, I first met Nancy on the campaign trail in Illinois. I always loved her. One of my sharpest opponents in the race. And that's somehow that got juxtaposed behind him. Nee, 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 nee. Pretty weird how that happened. But anyways, my sugar plum went on to say this. He started talking about, I have to defend the individual again. We have to go back to square one. And this is about, what is freedom? What is the individual? Who gives you this? Is it the government that gives you this? Or is it our creator? Are we endowed with certain inalienable rights to life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness? And I'm seeing this, my little blonde pea brain is going, okay, I know what we're doing here. But here's the thing, folks. The analogy to be using, the framing to be using is this. Okay, yeah, you have a right. We all have individuals. Absolutely. We're all a country of individuals. We absolutely are. All right? I have a yard. You have a yard. Okay? I have a right to my yard. You have the right to your yard. Does your dog have a right to constantly come pee in my yard and ruin my grass?
More importantly, does your cat have a right to come and wander through my yard?
Well, see, all right, cats, now you're going to get me into some trouble there, because I'm going to have...
I'm just here to stir things up, okay? That's all.
Deferential treatment. You're going to get the cat people all... I just got them quieted down. I'm getting cat, hate-filled cat lover emails left and right. I'll share with you. Here's another example. We all have a right to drive on the road, right? You have a car. I have a car. Why do we have insurance, Rush? Because should it be voluntary? Should insurance be voluntary? Because if it is, then the people who can't afford it are going to hit your car and not pay for it. That's the way it goes. So this is not about the individual. This is about when individuals exceed their boundaries of individualism and their own rights, and they jeopardize the rest of the system, the rest, like our financial system, when they are stealing and ripping off from you. That's what this is about. This is not about your inalienable rights to life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. No matter how powerfully emotional that sounds to people of simple minds, it is not about that. These guys at AIG FP were not just minding their own business. They were engaging in leveraging beyond any bounds of what they knew to be something they could deliver on, knowing they were playing with the rest of our money the whole time, okay? So if we have to tax that to get redressed, to get the money back from people who stole it, I have no problem with that. All right, beyond that issue, you got to focus on the bigger issue here. One issue we have not talked a lot about is just the whole idea. This has been going on, this gravy train of outrageous executive compensation for those at the top of these organizations, and the lack of governance and accountability for the CEOs and everybody else. You know, it's the wealth. That great sucking sound has been coming from the middle, frankly, not the bottom, the middle to the top. For years now, without anybody even doing anything about it. And so Sarah Anderson is joining me. She's the director of the Global Economic Project at the Institute for Policy Studies. She co-authored a report, Beyond the AIG Bonuses. This report is the taxpayer subsidies for executive excess that haven't hit the headlines yet. They have gone through in the this annual IPS executive excess report and detailed how we, the taxpayers, subsidize, okay, through the tax code, these excessive bonuses for these corporations. This isn't just everybody staying and peeing in their own yards. This is about people peeing in other yards. Now, Sarah, I can't think of a better way to say that. Maybe you can. First of all, thank you for joining me, Sarah Anderson.
Oh, my pleasure. It's been a lot of fun listening to you and your honey pie, Rush.
Well, you know, he's hard to love, but once you do, you know, there ain't no going back.
Yeah, well, the point we were trying to make with this report is that with the bailout money, that's the clearest way to see how the rest of us taxpayers and the broader public has a stake in the executive pay issue, because here our money is going directly from our pockets into these guys' pockets, the guys who created this crisis, and thank you for reminding everybody of that. But there are a lot of other ways that as taxpayers we're subsidizing this insane system of executive pay. There's our tax code is riddled with loopholes that benefit executives. For example, there's no limits, meaningful limits, on how much companies can deduct from their taxes for the cost of executive compensation. So the more they pay these guys, the more they can deduct. And there is a proposal in Congress now that would deal with that would put a cap on the tax deductibility, so at least the rest of us wouldn't be subsidizing these insane levels of pay that really encourage the reckless behavior that got us into this crisis.
Mm-hmm. Because, like, just to underline that point here, because people say, well, so what? Because, you know what, there are other restrictions on what can be deducted from your income that the government will enforce.
Right.
You know, your equipment depreciation, these other things, mm-hmm. your operating expenses. So why is it that executive compensation, it's the big, you drive a truck through that loophole. I mean, you know, come on.
Right.
In fact, they have an interest. They have a perverse interest in running up the executive compensation and deferred compensation to the point, well, not maybe deferred because it's not that tax year, but to the point that it's a completely perverse incentive. They won't be paying their taxes. They will be getting a tax credit if they can jack it up high enough.
Exactly.
We pay them for their outrageous excess.
Right, and that's just one example. There are other just crazy, outrageous loopholes in our tax code. There's one that allows hedge fund managers to pay a lower tax rate than their secretaries. That's because they can claim a lot of their compensation as capital gains, which is taxed at only 15% compared to 35% on their income. And so,
Sarah, if you will, I want to go through a couple more of these and let people, because this is all spelled out in this report. It's really cool, guys. You're gonna need to print this. They have a chart. Handy dandy chart, so that you when you're at the bar and fighting with an insane bald guy who tells you that his, I said to him, my comeback to this guy was, listen, just because I outwitted you gives you no right to criticize my blouse. That was my comeback. But Sarah, will you stay with us and share with us some more of these loopholes so people, in case their blouse comes under attack by an insane bald guy? Sarah Anderson is my guest. She's the director of the Global Economy Project at the Institute for Policy Studies. Let me spit that out correctly. And she will stay with us, and you will join us at 866-991-9927 right here on the Nancy Skinner Show. You have no idea. It's so infectious. You know how it is. You know that feeling, that warm, fuzzy feeling in your stomach I get every time I listen to my honey buddy Rush Limbaugh. He's going to love me tomorrow, actually. You can watch me on, what was the show? Cashing In on Fox News. The question was the AIG bonus situation the best thing that could have possibly happened to the economy? The premise being that all of a sudden we're going to realize that government should never, ever, ever interfere with business, because when they do, bad things happen. I said, that's kind of like rewarding a multiple DUI driver with a bottle of Jack Daniels. That's really how I had to start that one off, and then went on to explain this in my me against fork like mode that I end up often in on that network. Sarah Anderson is with me. She's the director of the Global Economy Project at the Institute for Policy Studies, and they have done a very great thing for you. What they've done is, beyond this idea of just, okay, this is about individuals making money and the free market's perfect. No, in fact, we are actually in the bailout package that you guys have specified, Sarah. The bailouts, in particular, the bailouts do not include effective restrictions on employee compensation, but you go beyond that and look at the tax code in general and how that for years it's just been tilted toward those at the top that run the companies, and nobody has been essentially talking about it.
Yeah, it's really important for everyone to understand that they have a stake in this debate on executive pay, not just when it comes to the bailout companies where it's obvious because it's our taxpayer money going directly to these firms, but in general, because our tax code is so riddled with loopholes that benefit executives. And what does that mean? It means the rest of us have to pick up the tab. We have to pay more in taxes to make up for these guys getting away without paying their fair share. And I mentioned that just one of the most outrageous ones is one that benefits hedge fund managers. It allows them to pay a lower tax rate than their secretaries because by a mistake in the tax code, they're allowed to claim their compensation as capital gains, which is taxed at only 15%. So beyond just going after these bonuses of the AIG guys, we need to have a broader reform that really addresses this problem to make sure us taxpayers are not subsidizing these obscene levels of executive pay.
Well, I mean, you could even make a more general argument, could you not, that the whole idea of dropping the capital gains tax down while, as they did, and for folks who essentially sit on their assets, as opposed to those people who collect paycheck, that you're playing, there's preferential treatment there. And what you're doing is just pointing out the most egregious form when when they are collecting that paycheck, but they can call it capital gains. But you could even make a broader argument, could you not? I mean, if you get your money from what's one form of income, a paycheck versus an interest check? Should they be taxed differently? Why aren't we even having that debate?
We should be having that debate. I don't understand why you're taxed higher for money that you actually earn. You go out and do the work versus money you get by sort of sitting back and letting your money, you know, work for you through these investments. And so I think that's another thing that should be brought up, especially now that we need to figure out how to raise revenue to pay for this economic recovery so we're not in this terrible debt for, you know, generations to come. And I think that's a very valid thing to look at, along with other things like putting taxes on speculation. We need to be putting an end to this casino economy, the kind of really high-risk gambling is what I would call it, with our money that got us into this crisis.
We're just up against my hard break here. So where can people, first of all, get this report so they can actually get their hands on this?
Right. Well, I'm with the Institute for Policy Studies, and our website is ips-dc.org. That's ips-dc.org.
Okay. So that you can actually see this. So when you can go to the bar and talk to the outrageous bald guy who puts you down with insults about your blouse. But hey, we have 1 minute left. What about this bill that Barney Frank is putting forth to end all, ban all bonuses for all bailout monies? Are you guys, do you think this is a good start?
That sounds like a good start, but you know, let's not just look at the bonuses. They're going to shift the money into other compensation. Then we'll have to have a bill next week to tax back the jacked up salaries or the jacked up perks. And so, you know, let's make it broader.
Yeah, got it. It's kind of like campaign finance reform now. Yeah. An unending money chase. Sarah Anderson, thank you so much. We appreciate your good work. We'll have lots of conversations about this in the future.
All right, thank you. Bye.
Okay, all right. See, guys, it goes further than this. So don't let my honey money fool you. It's not about just your money. No, it's my money subsidizing your bonus, dude. That's what it's about. And I want a new car to buy from Detroit. Your calls are next. 866-991-9927 on the Nancy Skinner Show.
I imagine the bowling alley has been just burned and closed down.
No. I've been practicing
bowling. Really?
I bowled a 129.
That's very good.
Yeah.
Oh, that's very good, sorry, Mr. Brendler.
This is like Special Olympics or something.
That's very good.
Listen, I'm making progress on the bowling. Yeah.
And how about, are you going to put a basketball court?
Oh, yes. Yeah. Yes. Well, we have a basketball court already at Camp David. We just had a little rim that was inadequate at the White House. Now, but there are tennis courts, so we're going to just get those, those rims that you can roll in and out.
Right.
And we'll just put them on either end.
Can you be funny and serious at the same time? No. Stay in your box. Stay in your serious global economic meltdown box, or stay in your humor box. You cannot. It's like keep your peanut butter out of my Reese's chocolate, right? Must those two forever remain separate? Lots of people mad at President Obama for having the audacity. Imagine that. The audacity of humor is what they're mad about, because he's got a sense of humor. Yes. He's explaining our crisis every day and dealing with it. But he went on Jay Leno last night and did it in a different format to a lot more people, frankly, 5 million viewers than ever watch most of the political chat shows, I'll tell you that. Except for my appearance on Cashing In, which will be about Fox News. I think it's about 1.5 million viewers. Shameless plug. It is the Nancy Skinner Show. 866-991-9927 is the number to the program. Back and forth about whether that venue was appropriate or not appropriate. Did he communicate the depth of the problem, the serious economic consequences, and the need, reiterate the need for action on them? while cracking a few jokes and having some a lighthearted banter with Jay Leno, who said it was the best night of his life, by the way, that he met President Obama. It was a very touching moment for me to watch. Mark Silva is with me to debate that point. He's the Washington correspondent for the Chicago Tribune and a blogger at SwampPolitics.com. So having been at the Chicago Tribune, knows a lot about Barack Obama and may even know something about my race against Barack Obama if you were around long enough, Mark. I don't know if you were back during doing your stuff during the 2004 primary, Senate primary.
Well, unfortunately, thanks for having me. Unfortunately, I was pretty much tied up in the presidential election, George Bush's reelection campaign in 2004. So I'm afraid I missed it.
You missed it. Well, but, I was one of the seven Democrats in that primary. My name is actually on the ballot with Barack Obama. I have one of the original metal ballots from, you know, the old precinct ballots there in Chicago. Are you Chicago?
Yeah.
Yeah. So how cool is that?
That's historic. That's historic.
Very historic. And I became one of his biggest fans in the process of having debated him like 10 times on the stage. So I knew in long in advance when people said he had no chance of winning. I said, wrong. Guy's really super smart. And so that's what you talk about in your latest piece here, Obama's Jay Leno humor or hubris. I mean, that's what I think the beauty to President Obama is. He really is the smartest person I know and, that most of us will ever know. He has the intellectual capacity. I call it the three I's. I call it intellect, integrity, and instinct is what I've been asked many times about him. But he does have that grasp and the ability to explain these complex subjects that we're dealing with in very simple terms. But he's also funny and it's disarming, and it's in a way that his critics would love to attack him. You've got to like the guy when he uses a sense of humor. So isn't the Leno Show a perfect venue for that?
Oh, I would agree that he is, one, smart, two, has a good sense of humor, and three, is very open-minded toward appearing in, you know, venues that people used to think off-limits, and all of that is good. And I think, his intelligence shines through in a venue like that. He talked for, 33 minutes, including the commercials, last night. The only problem is, humor is one thing, but then thoughtless remarks, which is what the White House described his joke today as, those aren't so good. So, one thing is to joke, but the other thing is to liken your basketball, your bowling, to the Special Olympics. So, everybody.
That's the risk. That's the risk when you put yourself out there and you communicate. That is the risk. He apologized. He does quickly, but you can't possibly expect someone to be on and have all those things without making an occasional gaffe and having to apologize.
I agree. That's right. And that is the risk. When you put yourself on a stage in an impromptu situation, his critics like to joke that, without the teleprompter, he's nothing, which is absurd because he's obviously a smart and capable debater who can think and talk on his feet very well. But you are in a situation outside of the teleprompter where, improvisation takes over and you get comfortable. And he was, he was into the talk and relaxing and enjoying himself. And so there you are. I think also the hallmark of rebounding from humor like that is to acknowledge quickly what you did. And he apparently, the president apparently telephoned the chairman of the Special Olympics before the show even went on the air, because, having gone through the taping, it was pretty clear what had happened. So, before the program even aired, he was on the phone apologizing and, voicing his remorse. So that's an important part it's an important part of what the president likes to call screwing up. I mean,
he screwed up and he apologized on this, but let's dwell on this a little bit. I'm going to do something. I'm going to tempt myself a little bit.
Yeah.
So the humor was, since he's not a good bowler, that he was trying to, that was one of his campaign events, and didn't score anything?
It was an abysmal score. I mean, I want to think that it was somewhere around 30 or something. Gutter balls. I actually wasn't a full frame of bowling either. It was a number of frames. But it was something fairly, something fairly embarrassing.
The context then of the joke was, look, I'm up to 120.
Right.
And, I'm still not a performer. So the context of the joke is like, that's like saying, comparing someone who's an NFL player to someone who's a little leaguer or whatnot, except for the part that, that got sticky is that it is not within the ability of somebody who is has a physical handicap to achieve that. So, you know,
right.
That is that the sensitive? I mean, that is the sensitive. I'm not going to ask you that question, but...
No, that's it. That's in a nutshell. We tend not to want to make jokes about people who are challenged mentally or physically. It's just not very good. And so, you know, to use the Special Olympics analogy, it's just a quick aspersion. You know, I mean, in another situation, somebody who is just callous and routinely insensitive would say something like that. You know, there's one word that we don't normally like to see as an adjective for someone who's handicapped and mentally so, and we've taken that out of our vocabulary. And you know, I mean, we try to show some sensitivity to, you know, this. I mean,
absolutely, I agree with that. But like, you know, I guess the key is in anything intent. And that there was no intent to hurt anyone's feelings. It was a lame attempt at a joke, which to me, I mean, there's levels of severity. You write in your piece, your blog about this, you know, that he's taking a risk. And you have people taking so much offense. Mary Kay, Kate Carey, a former speechwriter for President Bush, said, "No sitting president has ever appeared on any comedy show." As if, you know, we're breaking some sort of standard that was, thrown from the heavens.
Oh, no,
where you appear.
The willingness to appear in a comic forum is good. You know, I mean, John McCain was the first sitting senator to appear on Saturday Night Live, and Sarah Palin, even in the midst of when, you know, she was being skewered on Saturday Night Live, went on the show and showed a pretty good game face. So, you know, the ability to step into a forum where people could make fun of you or laugh at you or you could say something that you'll regret, that's a good thing. I mean, that's important. And I think particularly in the media world in which we live today, there's so many venues that people get their information from, you know. I mean, Comedy Central, The Daily Show, and
well, you know, that's a really, really good point. That, you know, the idea, I think we've crossed some weird boundaries here. We are getting more, if it were not for what Jon Stewart did to Jim Cramer and CNBC, you know, this would go on, this mindless acceptance of business media reporting and the fact that there's no there oftentimes, and that they were not investigative journalists, that they are often cheerleaders. If it wouldn't have been on a comedy show, we wouldn't be having a discussion about the validity of the journalism that goes on that led to this house of cards. Right?
Right. You know, it is contextual, and you know, it's interesting too. I mean, as I said, the president was on the program for 33 minutes minus the commercial spots, but nobody today is talking about the culture of greed on Wall Street that he was talking about, or what the AIG scandal says about the government's failure to regulate. I mean, you know, he went on the show with an avowed interest in talking about serious matters. He wanted to use it as a forum to talk about real problems.
And most of it was.
Nobody's talking about that today. All anybody's talking about is the Special Olympics. So that's the downside of the venue and the willingness to freelance. But the downside is that for 2 days, people can talk about some silly joke as opposed to the serious thing that you wanted to talk about.
But the problem is everybody's so, you know, stressed out. Mark, to tell you the truth, we are also stressed out by hearing the day after day. And after the anger that went on this week over the AIG bonuses, I'm on the firing end of this. Try being a talk radio host and, you know, hearing from people. They're angry. They're upset about this. They're anxious about their own situation. I think that what President Obama tries to do is he tries to, with that smile, that laugh, doesn't he just get that, when he does that laugh and he comes up with some things, he tries to be real in a way that some of his critics will say is unpresidential to be real. And to me, it's just the opposite. I trust someone who's more real and that has a sense of humor and can talk to me about AIG than I do someone who wears, you know, one dimensional suits.
Oh, you bet. The ability to laugh at oneself, that's the entry level for me in politics. I mean, you really have to have that. And you know, he told a good joke last night. He talked about how tough it is being president. You know, being president is like being on American Idol, except everyone is Simon Cowell.
That was great.
That was funny. And, you know, that's probably a prepared line, but it was funny.
And even improv. I did improv in Chicago, Mark, so that'll tell you a little bit. You know, you got to, even he said, like, the submarine that follows him around. Now that was improvisation. I will tell you that no writer wrote that joke for him.
Yeah, he made fun of the presidential motorcade, you know. So these are funny things and a willingness to, you know, have fun and you know, I just think he unfortunately stepped in a little bit of a minefield that he certainly understood the sensitivity of and so they apologized to the town.
Yep. Well, it'll happen. It's going to happen again and again. Anyone who's in the public eye, I assure you of that. I've done it myself quite a few times. Mark Silva, the Washington correspondent for the Chicago Tribune. Thanks, Mark. We appreciate you joining us. You have a great weekend, and we'll talk to you again.
Thanks for having me.
You bet. Absolutely. If I told you something, I haven't done many, but that's on it. Try to be on the air for 3 hours every day and not step in it and occasionally let loose an offensive remark about cats. 866-991-9927. What do you think? Perfect. I want you guys' thoughts on that. Too much humor? Inappropriate for him to go on Jay Leno to talk about this. Or real? Real. Like a real human being. A smart guy. Who cares where he said what he had to say? Or if he uses humor to talk about... I use humor and substance. I'm one of those people. I can't have to have both. Okay? That's just not white toast. I am not dry white toast. Like it or not, people. 866-991-9927. The lame number to the Nancy Skinner Show. Choose between having a sense of humor or brain. That's it. Emails pouring in at what's my email address here? Nancy at Skinner Live. No, that's wrong. Nancy at NancySkinnerLive.com.
Much better. You almost have it.
Nancy at NancySkinnerLive.com. People apparently, some like my sense of humor, some are mad. I should not have any sense of humor whatsoever. I should just hate everyone. Be more hateful. So I'll get to those, but I want to get to your calls first because I'd rather have more fun with you on a Friday. 866-991-9927, the number to the Nancy Skinner program. Let's see. We're going to go first to, Judy? Judy's out in Laurel Bay, California. Hi, Judy.
Hi, Nancy. How are you today?
I'm great. Thank you. Thanks for calling.
Good. I had two comments. One is about that so-called joke regarding disabled handicapped people. That, you know, I think that's a sign of a mindset, of something that's deep within us that we don't want to say out loud, but it's something that we sort of believe in. You know, and I would like to know why, if he was going to make a joke about anybody who might be underprivileged, why didn't he joke about himself? Why didn't he say something like, it took me about 5 hours to come up with something, but why didn't he say something like, you know, I'm supposed to be born with rhythm. How come I didn't get this bowling down?
You know,
he's turning it on himself.
You know, he does joke about himself, and self-deprecating humor, you're correct, is the best form of humor. But he didn't do it, and I don't think it belies some underlying mindset to his persona. I don't. I believe that he cares about people, that he's a good guy, and all of us have made dumb gaffe jokes in our life, Judy. You've got to admit. You've never made a gaffe, a joke. He said, you know what, that just didn't sound right, and I should not have said that. You've never done that?
Well, maybe that's the reason not to go on the talk shows.
Well, he's trying. You know, his bigger aim was to reach out to the American public.
Talk shows.
No, it's not he wants lights to go on talk shows. He went on there so he could get his point out. Most of that discussion, as Mark Silva brought up, was about the situation we are facing. Can you occasionally have a sense of humor as you're going through it? Yeah, I think everyone complained that he's not serious enough, and that, you know, he's too pessimistic. It's all gloom and doom. So when he picks his brackets for the NCAA, or he makes a joke, when he talks about life being normal, they're mad at him because he's got to spend all his time obsessed with the meltdown. How dare he spend 10 minutes at a time laughing or picking some basketball teams? Which is it? Give the guy a break, man. He's not a superhero. Just the President of the United States. 866-991-9927. Tim is in Columbus, Ohio. Hi, Tim.
Hi, Nancy. How are you?
I'm losing it, I guess, technically.
Yeah, we're all are. Hey, but really enjoy your show. But, you know, I was when I was listening to this, you know, and, of course, there was an apology that came from Barack Obama. You know, he said, you know, that was, I blew it.
He did.
But George Bush, you remember during that the correspondence.
Where
he was talking about no weapons of mass destruction here, no weapons of mass destruction here. And meanwhile, soldiers were coming back injured. People were dying. You know, infrastructure was bombed. Halliburton was ripping us off. Cheney was receiving benefit from that and still is.
Well, and Tim, you know what? You know, I'm so glad you brought that up to remind me, because you know what's even worse about that? That was not off the cuff. Those remarks are scripted, written by a staff. You know, he should have previewed that speech a million times, and still it went through.
Exactly. It didn't come just you know, something spontaneous. You're right. It was scripted. It was actually meant to be funny. And I didn't see it. I didn't see any humor in it. But.
Best comment of the day. You nailed it, Tim, right, in Columbus, even though you're a Buckeye and I'm a Wolverine. And you guys aren't in the March Madness, are you?
I beg your pardon?
You guys didn't make it to the basketball tournament, did you?
You know, I'm too busy working. I haven't even watched anything.
All right, I'll keep you up to date.
All right, thanks.
Michigan made it through. All right, we're going to keep going with your phone calls, 866-991-9927. Everyone's mad. You got to be one or the other. Choose, smart or funny. I say both. What's wrong with that? Why not? 866-991-9927. It is Friday, after all, people, on the Nancy Skinner Show. Everything to everybody. It is impossible. I don't care. You're in politics, you're on the radio, or you're just a regular person, or you're married. You are not going to be everything to everybody. They're going to like your theme song, or they're going to hate your theme song. If you like cats, you hate cats, whatever. It just doesn't matter. It is the Nancy Skinner Show. I'm Nancy Skinner, 866-991-9927. It's the number to the program. We're going to get right to your calls. But let me give you what a great two emails that just popped up during the break. All right, so I'm getting one email from, this is from D, let's call him. I think it's Dimitri. It's his first name, Dimitri. Dimitri. Dear Nancy, I've been listening to your show since the powers that be put you on in Queen Randy's time slot. I've been listening to Air America since its first day on the air. Since then, I've learned that all progressive talk hosts are not alike. Of course, that would be boring. However, I've noticed that some progressive talk hosts are not what they seem. In other words, they are Republican light. I believe you are that. If I had a quarter for every time you mention your love bunny, Rush Limbaugh, or your many appearances on Fox Noise, I'd be able to survive on my unemployment check with no problem right now. See, you made a funny, Dimitri. Just now, you probably told a caller that you are not liberal enough for many listeners. You got that right. You remind me of Alan Combs, lame liberal hired to fight the faux right. He goes on to say really nasty things about me. Then I get another one from Andrea, who says, "Hi, Nancy. I just wanted to let you know that I really appreciate the light and humorous tone you bring to the news of the day. I've been listening to KTLK online ever since our local Phoenix station went kaput, and I have to turn it off when another host comes on before you. I love and appreciate what another host does before on his show, but it gets me so angry and frustrated and stressed out. No fun. I always make sure to turn the radio back on when you come on, though, because I know you'll make me feel better. I've always said that the quickest way to take the powers away from the disingenuous talking points du jour is to laugh at them. And you do that perfectly while still educating and enlightening me. Andrea." Thank you, Andrea. See, I mean, you cannot make everyone happy. So President Obama goes on Jay Leno last night and talks mostly about the global economic meltdown, which I mostly talk about. And, Dimitri, I have to tell you, sir, you are wrong about me pulling punches. Go watch me tomorrow on this show. I have done MSNBC for years and CNN and Talkback Live. I was one of the first talk show hosts, Democrats, on radio. I've never pulled a punch in my life. I've been Republican light is ridiculous. I was one of the first people ever talking about global warming when we were considered complete oddballs. I have run for office 2 times, Dimitri. Have you run for office and put yourself and your life and everything you believe in on the line and fight and strive for this? So I assure you, I am not Republican light, my friend. But the idea that I am able to have a conversation with people who disagree with me and not have it be a hate-filled sort of three-ring circus so you feel better about your position, to me, that's not going to get us anywhere. I think you got to engage hearts and minds and move forward and take on different venues. So President Obama is doing that. He's a smart guy. He can go on Jay Leno. He can talk about the global economic meltdown. And everybody now, there was more outrage now about what I am seeing about the Special Olympics jokes than the AIG bailouts and how those guys ripped us off. I mean, honestly, by judging from just the last 24 hours, I can't believe it. And my phone's 866-991-9927. More people outraged about that off-color joke, for which he apologized, than these executives who ripped us off and have yet to apologize. Or, oh, I asked him to give it back. It was distasteful. And now he's getting blamed for being too omnipresent, okay, the celebrity president, in an article in Politico, the everywhere president, saying, you know, he's out there picking his bracket picks for the NCAA. Jay Leno, he's here, he's there. You're risking losing all your credibility by going out and actually talking to people or being normal or having a sense of humor or sharing that other side of you for which everyone has. If people are one-dimensional, you think they get on the radio or all these politicians have no personal life, they never joke, they don't have interests and all these things, you're crazy. Everyone is like you, people. Everyone is the same. We're all the same. If there's one lesson in this, Obama has just chosen to show more sides than most presidents, in my view. But it's not my view only that I care about. William Arruda is a personal branding expert. Boy, do I need one of those. Because nobody gets my brand. I'm an enigma to people. I'm funny. I'm a Democrat. I'm a progressive on Fox News. So we've asked William to join us, talk a little bit about the Obama, this article in which he's quoted in Politico, the everywhere president, about the risks of overexposure by our president. But I'm going to tap his brain about, you know, crossing, getting out of your box, out of your comfort zone a little bit. Thanks for joining us, first of all, William. Is it William or Bill?
It's William, actually, and thanks. It's great to be here, Nancy.
Yeah, great to have you. So you think, in terms of, let's start with Obama, you think that that it was a gamble for him to go on Leno?
It wasn't a huge gamble. There's risk and reward. I think with Obama, he has an amazing latitude. Everyone wants more. Not everyone, right? Every strong brands, as you just pointed out, they often repel as many people as they attract. He obviously mm-hmm. has a huge number of people he's attracting from both sides of the aisle.
Like you're thinking Ann Coulter, right, in terms of...
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Oh, but almost every brand. Do you know, if you type in Google, "I love Oprah" and "I hate Oprah," there are people who've written things that say, "I hate Oprah." So
no.
Even Oprah, who seems to be the most lovable character on the planet.
It should be illegal, actually.
Well, but it's true. And I think what you pointed out earlier about, you can't be wishy-washy, you can't be all things to all people. That's absolutely true. And the more you are willing to take a stand, the more even the people who don't necessarily like you, the more they'll respect you.
Well, I think President Bush benefited from that. I mean, how many times have we heard that I don't agree with anything he's doing, but he seems so confident and sure of himself. Wasn't he using personal branding to sell the war and his policies, that I'm the macho Texas rancher, tough guy, war president, and I'm sure of my opinions? You might not agree with me, but I know I believe in what I believe.
Exactly. You know, branding is based in authenticity. You can only get around being fake for so long. Right, Amaro Lindbergh once said the most exhausting thing you can be is inauthentic. And if one thing George Bush was, it's authentic. He was who he was, right? He wasn't putting on a show. That's who he was. And like him or hate him, and toward the end of his term, obviously there were more people on the hate side, but he was really consistent in who he was and what he communicated and how he communicated it, and really stubborn and confident about it. And that's what attracted a lot of people to him.
Now, you've done this for a living, William. This is very interesting. You've been over 20 years working in branding and consulting at KPMG, IBM, Lotus, a lot of other places, written a book on it, Career Distinction, Standing Out by Building Your Own Brand. So this is not just for the President of the United States. I mean, everybody in anything, especially now, I would say, if you're trying to succeed in business or whatever, that you're alleging establishing a strong brand is preferable than to be wishy-washy or dry white toast.
More than preferable, it's absolutely essential. If you think of the job market right now, where there are hundreds of qualified applicants for every single open position, if you don't stand out somehow, if you don't offer something that's uniquely available from you, then what's going to make someone choose you over the hundreds of other people? Mm-hmm. Right, so you need to be willing to take a stand, knowing that taking a stand is going to, get some people to not like you.
It's hard to accept that, though. In my case, for instance, if you heard my setup piece, clearly I'm a progressive Democrat. I've run for office twice, federal office, almost won once, ran against Barack Obama. I was one of the pioneers in progressive radio, but I'm not. I use humor a lot. I did improv. I studied improv in Chicago. That's who I am. And I debate the other side. I like going on Fox News. I like debating four or five Republicans. So that puts me, I have the hardcore lefties that think I'm not left enough, even though my policies are. And then you have the right wingers who hate me because I'm a lefty on Fox News. Am I just basically screwing myself on the branding, William?
No, I think you know what you're doing is that really is a unique brand. The more distinctive you can be, the stronger your brand. If you were like all the super lefties out there, then it would be hard to really discern among all of you. And the fact that you are willing to have debates with people on the right, and you're willing to add your humor, which is part of who you are, and your all your stand-up work that you've done into who you are, that makes you that much more unique.
So it's right? But I'm some offshoot of what I would think of transgender is the word. It would be
probably the first time you've said that.
At the risk of gaffes, I was actually endorsed by the transgender community in my race in Chicago. So for people who think I'm Republican light, you don't get the transgender endorsement.
Something tells me you have to be pretty far left to, yeah.
Hey, well, this is really great stuff. You and I got to talk again because I'm going to need some counseling, apparently, as we maneuver these waters. William Arruda, brand strategist. Do you have a website for people to go check out this more on this?
Yes, it's reachpersonalbranding.com.
Reachpersonalbranding.com. Good stuff for this environment, too, because, like you said, it's time to stand up, be counted, let them know who you are, and don't be afraid of that, right?
Exactly.
All right, great. Thanks, Will. Appreciate you being here.
Thank you. Great to be here.
Okay, great. And your calls are next, I promise. Line's full. People hate me, love me. See, I guess William would say that's a good thing. Not dry white toast. And to Dimitri, when I call Rush Limbaugh, honey, bunny, do I have to have a joke disclaimer before I tell? Eric, do me a liner, all right, next time, so that when I'm going to tell an actual joke, that we drop this.
This is a joke. This is a joke.
So Dimitri doesn't get upset.
Dimitri, this is a joke.
That's perfect, Dimitri. Hang in there, buddy. It'll be all right. 866-991-9927 on the Nancy Skinner Show. right. I got to jump right back in here. Regain my computer. My laptop is now dead. My screen, I have no laptop, people, just so you know. Because of this whole debate about humor and what's appropriate and not appropriate, I was talking about the emailer who said I'm too Republican because I'm not left enough, or I'm Republican light because I go on Fox News. And I said I had gotten the endorsement of the transgender community in Chicago, for gosh sakes. And off the air, I'm talking to Eric and Miss Liz, and I'm drinking my coffee. I said, you know what my campaign manager said when we got the transgender endorsement? He said, good, can they vote twice? And I said, should I tell that on the air, or will I get pilloried by the PC crowd for that joke? And I'm just take a sip of my coffee, and Eric over there says,
this is a joke.
I spit my coffee out over my computer screen.
So much for that computer.
It's
hey, it's
gone.
Part of the stimulus deal. You can buy a new computer.
It's gone because of that. It was a joke, okay? I fully support, and I'm sure the president supports all people and will do much more for anyone with any physical disability than will any of his predecessors. But everybody is so upset by this silly remark and more outraged than they should than they are with AIG and these bonus issues. 866-991-9927. I'm going to shut up. And who am I going to, Miss Liz? We're going to go to Joseph, who's been hanging on in Buffalo, New York. Hi, Joseph.
Hi. Thank you. I just wanted to say that this to me, this outrage, which I think is, you know, way trumped up. But I think it just highlights the, you know, lack of ideas coming out of the right wing. And, you know, if they're going to jump on this and try to take Barack Obama down, but they don't have anything, they don't have any ideas to talk about, so they get on this stuff. And these are the same people who disdain political correctness. So it's just the hypocrisy, the lack of ideas, it's just so obvious. I was listening to this conservative talker saying, oh, we used to hate it when the press jumped all over Bush's gaffes. Which were innumerable, you know.
Right.
But, and then they're like, so we don't think the press should jump all over this gaffe. And then they proceeded to talk about, you know, how wrong it was. You know, I mean, it's just, like, the hypocrisy is just so blatant.
That we invented, we had to invent a full term, a whole new terminology. Bush-isms.
Right.
For the voluminous gaffisms of our former president. Now they're outraged.
Yeah.
Because he's insensitive.
It's fake. I don't think it's going to last. I think on Monday, you know, it's all going to be passed. This is just their desperate shot. This is desperation.
Yeah,
and
I mean,
I think him going on Leno is great.
Yeah.
And, you know, that's their issue. I mean, it's just like,
right.
These guys have nothing.
Right.
They have nothing to talk about.
Absolutely. Nothing to talk about and no answers. So,
yeah.
You know what? Feel sorry for him. My gummy bear.
And I got to say, I think you're doing a great job. I miss Randy. I think you're doing fantastic. And I think, like Randy, you know, you do your homework and you're really informed. And your show's informative, unlike the conservative talk shows, which are, you know,
misleading.
Again, just, you know.
Purposely misleading. Yeah. They have to work harder almost than we do, because we just have to get educated. They have to actually figure out how to mislead. So that takes a little bit.
And with Rush Limbaugh, I mean, the guy doesn't debate anybody because he can debate himself.
No.
One day he says one thing. Next day he says, you know, one day he's hating all these liberals because they want to be so PC. The next day he's, you know, talking about, you know, what a horribly insensitive thing this is to say. And then, oh, it reflects something in his character and all this nonsense.
Yeah.
And it's just like,
he's perfectly comfortable living in that bizarre world. I assure you, Joseph. Thanks for calling. Appreciate it. I got to run along to, let's see, we're going to try and get Bill in here. Bill is in Riverside, California. Hi, Bill.
Hi. Hey, I wanted to bring up something that the previous caller just touched on. Does anyone out there in the Republican or conservative world remember Rush Limbaugh making humiliating references and imitations of Michael J. Fox's?
Oh, there you go. There you go.
And if anybody wants to jump on Obama for being insensitive instead of being possibly, you know, not thinking before he spoke, I don't think he was being deliberately insensitive, whereas Limbaugh was definitely being hurtful and hateful. And I think they should just run those clips side by side and see who is the person they need to be, you know, chastising.
Right.
I don't recall any Republican outrage over that.
Right, yeah. And the speech, and then, you know, there was a speech was brought up at the correspondents' dinner making fun of the war, missing weapons. You just brought up Rush Limbaugh. And how about Dick Cheney's? The mother of all insensitivities. He goes on the floor of the sentence, you got to give it to Dick Cheney. Talk about personal branding. Dick Cheney goes on the floor of the Senate and says to Harry Reid, I can't even say it on the radio, but you know what happens. That's what he. That's his personal branding. I'll just say it like it is. More of your calls next, right here on the Nancy Skinner Show. Without a net here today on the Nancy Skinner Show. Look, Mom, no hit. No net, no computer. You're supposed to say that on air, Eric.
This is a joke. And no computer.
I've ignited a firestorm among the transgender community with that joke and the loss of my computer screen. Nancy, I don't understand how you got the transgender vote if you don't understand that they're crossover voters. Get up to speed, girl, says Charlie. Okay, here we go.
They say crossover or cross-dresser?
Crossover vote. Get it? See, the humor involves subtlety of sorts, Eric. You can try it out. You can email me at Nancy at, what's my website? Nancy at Nancy Skinner Live. NancySkinnerLive.com is the website. And we're talking about President Obama. An article in Politico, actually, on a serious note. I'll get serious for a moment for my more serious-minded listeners. Does the president risk eroding his credibility, his dignity, to sell us the policies that are necessary, that being an overwhelming fiscal stimulus along the Keynesian lines that would involve massive infrastructure, energy, healthcare concerns? Does he risk that by focusing too much of his focus on his persona? In other words, can one have a tilt the meter to change the thinking of people, thereby persuading public opinion in the opposite direction to which one intended, or something like that is basically what this article says, with varying opinions as to whether it's a good thing or a bad thing for him to go on Jay Leno, basically is the upshot of it. Robert Thompson is a trustee professor of the television and popular culture at the S.I. Neuhaus School of Public Communications at Syracuse University, and wow, this is a long title, and founding director of the Blair Center for Television and Popular Culture. So he knows a lot about TV image, politics, branding, and this kind of thing, and was quoted in this article as saying it is and can be a risk, that it's a tricky thing. President being POTUS carries a certain amount of distinction, and when you put yourself too out there, you could lose that distinction. Professor, thank you for joining us. We appreciate you being here on a Friday.
Thank you for having me.
And am I accurately describing how you have positioned this, that you think there's some benefit, but you can go too far, and then the wizard has no clothes?
Yeah, I mean, there is a fine line. You know, you can. It also depends on the kinds of shows you're on. I think going on Jay Leno's Tonight Show last night was a relatively safe move to make. I don't think Barack and Michelle would want to become contestants on Dancing with the Stars. On the other hand,
I bet they'd be good though. I don't know.
I saw them in those inaugural balls. I think.
We're
not ready for that much.
You are correct, sir. Remember, they were kind of lame, actually.
And they were cute, and they looked very sweet together, but they sure didn't look like they could dance very well.
Right, yeah.
They looked like they may have trained in the Al Gore school of ballroom dancing.
And they danced the same song, and it was kind of like that, like tack, you know, that high school or middle school dance where you just go back and forth. So we stereotyped. There we go. We just used a racist stereotype. Because they're black, they could dance. I guess the whole world should be offended. But
I think it would be quite the reverse. We're pointing out how bad of a dancer they are.
Yeah.
But anyway.
But he did dance, Miss Liz is saying, and Eric, he did on Ellen. He got his groove on Ellen, on the show.
Yeah, a little bit.
Now, do you think that was inappropriate?
Well, first of all, that's when he's still running, and the rules are very different. When you're running for president, you know, you're kissing babies, you're jumping off trains. I mean, that has always been kind of a time where the usual rules of engagement change. There's always been this idea that, you know, a certain set of behavior is required while you're running for president, but once you finally secure the office, that suddenly, you know, you've grown up, something else has happened. And that's why we've had, you know, people have been going on to late night talk shows for decades while they've been running for president. It really is hard to believe that this is the first time it's actually happened once they've made it to the presidency. I think there's a couple of reasons for that. Number one, late night talk shows are actually becoming really respectable places for serious political discourse. Jon Stewart being the, you know, the most extreme case of that. And secondly, you know, if you want to talk to the entire citizenry now, you've really got to put together a coalition of venues. You can't just go on network TV and expect everybody to see you like you could have in the age of the Checkers speech back in 1952. Now you've got to go on ESPN, and you've got to go on The Tonight Show, and you've got to go on CNN, and all of the rest of it.
And if you also, I mean, in this new environment we're in, if you just issue press releases, no one reads newspapers anymore because guess what? Most of them are folded up, folding up.
And this presidency, I mean, from the jaw-droppingly effective internet campaign that they ran, from the fact that he didn't want to give up his BlackBerry, I mean, it makes sense that this would be the guy that would start doing this. However, whenever you do it, you, for one thing, If you're on television too much, it starts seeming like you're a television star and not actually doing the job, and he's starting to get a little bit of that backlash already. And secondly, every time you do it, you run the risk of occasionally stepping in something. Now, Barack Obama happens to be extraordinarily good at this. He's so articulate. He thinks so fast on his feet. He is funny. He's charming, but at the same time, he's never a clown. But sure enough, he actually managed one of those moments on Leno last night. That Special Olympics comment, he's actually getting less flack for that than I think he might have expected.
Well, you know, we've been talking about that, and a lot of people, my phones, I said earlier, I've seen more outrage about that slap, just judging from being a talk host, than I saw about the AIG bonuses, frankly, out there in the country.
Right. That gives you a real sense of where our priorities are.
Right. You know, in terms of my phones lighting up, people being outraged. But I would say this, Robert, and I don't know the facts on this, if that appearance on Jay Leno was prearranged. But, you know, you look at when I analyze media, I look at the oxygen in the room. And the oxygen in the political environment right now has been all about, he is this sort of a different thing. FDR, I'm rereading all my FDR stuff. Similar in his persona, he had a positive, charismatic persona to him, and a sense of humor and whatnot, even though he was going through grim times. These times are different, and so the president is trying to sell policies that are very, on the basis of the ideology here, we have to spend a lot of money to fix this problem. It's not a popular position to take, okay? So I think the reason he went on a show like this is that there's the filter of the media. If you go on to cable shows, if you confine yourself to your press spokesperson, especially Robert Kintz, who's a very smart guy, but he doesn't have the ability, the je ne sais quoi, if you will, of President Obama to communicate why we have to spend $1 trillion and maybe another $1 trillion and why we have to go through this bank stabilization process. And so everybody's jumping on him. The talking heads get equal time on the cable shows, right? They go right, left, you know, Republican congressman, Democratic congressman. Through that, if you are forced to get your message out through that system, you aren't going to be able to get it passed. He had to go trump that and go to a bigger stage, a bigger venue, reach out to average people and get outside of the political spectrum media, don't you think?
Well, yeah, absolutely. I mean, everything he said last night is stuff we've been hearing in 100 other venues. And you're absolutely right. What he needs to, what he is trying to do is to continue to hammer home his messages in every possible venue he can. And some of them are, you know, you go on tonight with Jay Leno, and you know Jay Leno, for one thing, he's a comedian, not a journalist. For another thing, he's not a politically aggressive comedian like Jon Stewart, so he's only going to get softballs. And yes, that was essentially an episode-long opportunity for a very mild-mannered, conversational, and very comforting way for Obama to deliver the same message we hear all day long in other kind of venues.
Right.
And
but who's watching? That's a whole different demographic of who. You and I presume you're as much a news junkie as I am. But the average person who's working, you know, the average person that he's talking about who's lost their health insurance and has a couple of jobs and is worried about losing their job, they're not sitting around watching the Situation Room or, you know.
Probably not, right? Although the average age for CNN is pretty similar to the average age for The Tonight Show, which is late 50s, thereabouts. But you're right. It is a different, it's a way for him to get a different, not only, though, a different audience, but also to explain it in a different way. And he really is good at that. Some presidents have been actually really good at doing PR for their own policies and their own administrations. Other presidents have actually been very poor at being their own spokespersons. He finds himself now in this confluence of being the simultaneously the biggest celebrity, the commander-in-chief, and at the same time, the coolest guy in the country all at once. And so far, I think he's been managing that bounty very effectively.
Okay, give me your two cents about the contrast between that mix and President Bush.
Well, I think President Bush did not go on late-night talk shows wisely. I think he understood that this was not his forte, that he was not good at answering questions in informal sorts of ways, that he had a hard time getting from one end of a sentence to another.
Of course, I would say, or formal ways. His press conferences weren't so good either.
Well, right. But, I mean, I think he stayed away from this because I think he and his people knew that these kinds of situations were really, really dangerous.
Gaff traps.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. And I think Barack Obama, on the other hand, this is something he is just so good at. And he was barely the sitting president. He hadn't had a chance to sit down, and he was already doing that interview with Matt Lauer for the pregame of the Super Bowl. That was like less than 2 weeks into his presidency, which was also very charming and funny. And
okay, so here's this is the last question for you, because this is really, I think, your point in this article here, is that the risk is, all right, if he has a charming personality and he has a natural sense of humor, does that, this is an issue for me, Professor Thompson, because I am a progressive talk show host and I talk a lot about the economy and I'm a finance major and I talk a lot about the issues, but I studied improv, I have a natural sense of humor. Do you risk, I'm the president, thank God, but do you risk taking the glean off the Oval Office dignity when people see you as real?
Well, I think, I mean, there is the old story that, or the old hackneyed phrase that familiarity breeds contempt. And I suppose to some extent there is some truth to that. On the other hand, I think Obama has always had gravitas to spare. I don't think he runs the risk of kind of trivializing the office by doing this in a way that some other candidates may not have been able to do as effectively. However, if you are there all the time, if you're constantly making appearances. These are clips that people can pull out again, and there always becomes this idea that if you're always talking about what you're going to do, there isn't some sense that you're making progress in that direction. That whole thing can then begin to blow up in your face. This is a really good strategy as long as everybody thinks there's actually, they see the light at the end of the tunnel getting bigger and bigger.
Yeah, and in his case, he actually did pass a fiscal stimulus bill. He's got a bank stabilization. He's done more in 2 months than any president, even FDR, did ever, you know, in 100 days. He's already done it. So I think maybe we're looking at he's breaking a mold here, and he can actually walk and chew gum and rub his belly.
Well, he can do all three of those, but it all gets down to perception, and we'll have to see. But so far, he's been performing pretty expertly with a couple of little stumbles here and there.
It's called a mulligan. Robert Thompson, professor of television and popular culture at the... Wow, you have the Newhouse School
Syracuse
of Pump.
University will do.
Syracuse. All right, you guys are in the NCAA, right?
Yeah, we just won a game this afternoon.
Ah, you did. I missed it. Okay, Michigan won, too. So we'll have you back. We love this commentary. We love talking about ourselves in the media.
I'll look forward to it.
Thanks, Professor. We got more of your calls here coming up in the last segment, 866-991-9927. Good guess, Miss Liz. These guys are smart guys. Thank you very much. And hang on the line, because I'm going to get to you next on the Nancy Skinner Show. To take on here at the end of this discussion about branding. Then I guess, would that be the topic of the day, kids, on the Nancy Skinner Show? 866-991-9927. I think it's been branding because of President Obama's appearance on Jay Leno last night. A lot of people feel that it's beneath the dignity of the oath of office to be on that show, even though he talked about important issues, but he also had a sense of humor. And generally, we've just spoken to a couple of experts in that whole thing. I get a lot of emails like this, so I'm going to read it just so I'm going to give you a little inside radio here. And from my viewpoint, from a very nice guy. Let me get his name first as I'm working my BlackBerry. Danny writes in, would love to be mentioned on your show if you read this. Okay, Danny, here you go in Long Beach. Danny writes in and says to Nancy at nancyskinnerlive.com. I've been listening to KTLK online at work literally all day, every day for about 2.5 years, and I'm glad you were there to fill the void left by Randy Rhodes. Admittedly, at first, I did think you weren't quite liberal enough, but you have differently convinced me of your liberal credentials. Now, please, he underlines this, please stop trying to convince me. Your show is nice, and it's great that you debate those on the right, but please lay off all the anecdotal attempts at defending and inflating yourself. Please try to stick more to the issues at hand and less about where you came from, how you got through college, your race against President Obama in Illinois, your apparently incredible love for Detroit, you being brave enough to be a pundit on Fox News and all other stories that you seem to talk about over and over and over. This happens frequently enough to the point of annoyance to both him and his girlfriend. She's the only other college student I know that spends large amount of times with the tuner on AM 1150, and it nearly makes me want to change the tuner to someone else. Well, enough with the criticism. Besides that, you are doing a great, in bold, job. And that one issue is not enough to make me stop listening. So keep up the great work. Oh, and a few things he wants me to talk about. Prosecution of Bush administration officials, which we have. The failure of the Democrats in the Democratic Party, which, oh, by the way, I have. Thanks for reading, Danny in Long Beach. Danny, let me just say this briefly. This is to the whole point of what President Obama is doing. In radio, I could just sit here and read scripts about what all those things and those issues. That who you are as a person matters. And you might have heard it because you're listening for 2.5 hours, but most people tune in every 15 minutes or so. That's the rule of radio. And I'm new. I'm back on the radio newly. Started a long time ago. So, you know, you got to give people a sense of who you are. And someone gave me a hard time about mentioning that I ran against Obama. Last night, Jay Leno said, "This is the best night of my life." Did you hear that at the end of the show? It really was touching. Now, so if I mention in my new show that this is an experience I've had, which is an incredible experience, because there's new listeners all the time. They get to know who you are. And yes, I love Detroit. I'm proud of loving Detroit and being a defender of Detroit. And people... that I had a Dalmatian. And, yeah, sometimes, you know what? I'm sorry. I don't freaking like cats. I mean, you're human. We're all human. So when I do get to your issues, Danny, and you've got to admit, buddy, I'm a pretty tough cookie on the issues. I get to them. I get deep in the weeds. But we're all human, and none of us are robots that think and you know, don't have personalities. And I share that with people, and that's part of why how you bond in this business and in life, frankly. So I appreciate you listening and hanging with me. I do. But I gave you a little inside stuff. I'm going to, you know, I'll be on Fox tomorrow at 11:30 on Cashman. One more shameless plug and be back right here Monday with you. Aw, the Nancy Skinner Show.